Welcome to the Pop Culture Pod Podcast. Now let's begin.
Podcast listener, and welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. I'm your host. My name is Chris Lockhart, and joining me this evening is my co-host in crime, Ragnar. How's it going, Ragnar?
Well, good, and hello, everyone.
And for this episode, I'm calling it How the Westeros Was Won. Because it's 2 years now since Game of Thrones went off the air. And, I mean, we've done a few episodes where we've talked about this, but, you know, with the 2 year anniversary just having passed, and it's the 10 year anniversary of the show, Ragnar and I are kind of in agreement here, or I think we are in agreement, that the show started out very strong, very well, and then it really ended on a whimper. So taking the line, how the West was won, we're doing how the Westeros was won. But tonight, I'm drinking an old fashioned again. But Ragnar, what are you drinking?
Well, I'm currently drinking from my Game of Thrones single malt Scotch whiskey collection.
Nice.
Now I do not have the complete collection. Some of these bottles were so sought after that they disappeared before I ever even saw them on the shelves. But I have 6 of them, and I'm drinking them in order of my least favorite to most favorite. So I'm just pouring very small samples, because if I'm going to have 6 scotches in a row, I still want to be coherent at the end of this recording.
Excellent.
First up is the House Stark, which was the most disappointing one in the collection, and it basically is the blandest, least tasteful scotch that I've ever had, and I think that's kind of an insult to House Stark, which is, you know.
Well, which is better? Like, what's the best?
My personal pick for the best in this lot is House Lannister, from the Lagavulin Distillery. If you're a Parks and Recs fan, you'll be familiar with Lagavulin. And then the next best one is the Night's Watch, which was made by a distillery called Oban, and it is very, very flavorful.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to say, in the show, like, the best wines tend to come from the south, and the north is... They kind of say the north isn't that good.
But if
the Night's Watch Scotch is the second best, then that theory kind of goes out the window.
Yeah, it goes off the edge of the wall, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. All right, let's get started. So I was thinking, like, I would break this down into twofold. Basically, I want to talk about the first, what went wrong? Well, first I want to discuss, like, the forgotten plot lines. So I kind of want to go over the forgotten plot lines. I got a couple lists that I downloaded from the internet because they're quite good. Then I wanted to talk about, and it might work in conjunction with those, what didn't work for the last couple seasons. And then I want to get into our take on how we would make this better. Like, if we could quantum leap ourselves into into Dan and Dave, the showrunners, how would we do things differently?
Sounds great, man.
So, so I got a couple lists that I pulled from the internet. One of the things, so I'm just going to read here. Throughout the series, there were many plot lines from the books that were brought into the show, and many GOT fans were excited to see these plots finally get ironed out in the show. Unfortunately, it seems the writers of the show forgot about some of these plot lines, or simply let them die on the show, and we're hoping that we would forget about them. Sorry to tell you, Weiss and Benioff, the showrunners, but the North, or us fans, remember. Here are some of the plot lines that irritated me the most on the show. So, once again, I want to give credit where the credit's due, but I can't remember where I got this from. So first up, Lord Varys' letter about Jon's true lineage. In one of the last episodes of the show, we saw Lord Varys writing letters about Jon's true lineage and sending them out, although one ended up burned in his study. What happened to the letters he was able to get out? Who did he send them to? Guess they ran out of time on the episode since he turned into a burned piece of bacon by Drogo in the end. Yeah, so, yeah.
That's an excellent point, and also it's certainly worth mentioning, and I have a feeling we'll mention this again later, that Varys is one of the characters that was totally wasted in the show.
Yep.
If you've read the book series, Varys is basically the puppet master. Mm-hmm. He's behind the scenes, and he's like every major thing that happens, he had a hand in. Mm-hmm. And like, he was helping to raise Dany, to groom her for the throne, knowing that Robert wasn't going to be good enough for it and that the Lannisters would most likely take over after he died. And in the show, they touch on that, but as the series goes on, his importance kind of gets, you know, lessened until by the end he's just sort of this, like, fussy, irritating guy. And I think that was I think they did him dirty there.
Yeah, and I always thought, yeah, there was some big reveal that we were going to get from Varys.
Yeah.
Like, for example, it was season 6, the end of season 6. Varys leaves Meereen before the battle with the slavers and all that. And he says he's got business to do. And he's got to go back to Westeros. And then in the last episode, we see him in Dorne with the Sand Snakes and with Lady Elena. So, you know, like, we're assuming they're in Sunspear, which is in Dorne. And then in, like, the next scene when but pretty close to, you know, a few minutes later, when we see Dany sailing from Meereen to Dragonstone, to Westeros, Varys is standing with her on the ship. And it's like, how the hell did he get all the way from Dorne to there? You know, like, I just kind of assumed, you know, maybe some time had passed. Like, maybe this is like a month or two later. But they kind of implied that it wasn't. So I always kind of thought maybe Varys wasn't just Varys. You know, maybe there was... Maybe he had brothers that looked, you know, maybe he was a triplet.
Hmm.
You know, okay. Like there was other, you know, like that's why he was able to, you know, have eyes all over the place, because maybe there was more than one of them.
Well, that's an interesting theory.
That was one of my theories anyway, going into that.
I was kind of hoping that it was like Varys talked about how he was disfigured by a magician.
Yep.
And I always thought it would have been a really cool twist if it turned out that he became a magician or a wizard or something and just hid it and let everyone believe that he hated that stuff so that nobody would ever suspect that he was actually, like, you know, the master wizard or something. That could have been a good twist.
Oh, yeah.
But I also would have been perfectly happy if he was just a regular man and had an extraordinary mind for politicking and spying and, you know, had no desire for power. And I mean, he even says at one point, I'm not on anyone's side. I'm on the side of the people, like the commoner, the peasants. And I would have loved to have seen him see that through and be like, you know, I helped guide a new ruler to the throne, and this new ruler will bring in an age of peace and abundance and plenty, mm-hmm. which will help the commoners, because that's who I care about. And it seems like kind of halfway through the show, they kind of stop on that plot line and they don't really expand on it. Because, I mean, way back in season one, you see him with Master Illyrio, who was sheltering mm-hmm. Danny and her brother.
Yep.
And they're plotting together. And they don't really ever build on that. And I think that was a real shame.
Yeah, and that's another thing. Like, not seeing Illyrio again. Like, I assumed, like, when him and Tyrion showed up in Essos, like, that was one of his palaces that they were at. Like, initially. Yeah. But we never see him. We never see him again.
Nope, he just disappears. And I would like to mention, I think that the guy they cast to play Varys was phenomenal.
Oh yeah.
He was a hell of an actor and turned in an amazing performance. I don't think the actor did the character dirty. I think it was the writers or the showrunners.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think they just decided at some point that there were more important plot lines that needed to be focused on, but they could have easily had that happen and then at the very end reveal that it was Varys the whole time.
Yeah.
And you could have shoehorned him into almost every plot hole, or plot, not plot hole, every plot line, and had it be like, you know, oh, that this thing happened because of Varys, and, you know, Arya ended up learning how to be a faceless man because of something Varys did. Like, he could have been responsible for everything.
Yep.
And that could have been a really cool reveal at the end of the show, this kind of fussy, mildly annoying guy that's in all the seasons turns out to be, like, the big daddy. You know, like, that could have been really cool.
Yeah. Well, and
instead of what actually happened.
Littlefinger, like, we know that he's the one that actually killed Jon Arryn. Like, he was the one that instigated Lysa to kill her husband. And we know that Varys is, you know, like, he's always watching Littlefinger, and he mentioned to Olenna, you know, like, he's the most dangerous man in Westeros, because he, you know, he would watch the Seven Kingdoms burn if he could be King of the Ashes.
Yep.
So what I always thought, you know, adding to what you're saying about Varys being the actual puppet master, I think, you know, like, as much as Littlefinger, you know, was a puppet master himself, I like to think that maybe Varys was in control of him without him even realizing it. Like, he was guiding Littlefinger to get the Starks and the Lannisters fighting each other. And so on. And then, you know, one of the things that scares Varys is that Littlefinger isn't exactly predictable. You know, like, he can predict what Ned Stark's going to do. He could predict what Tyrion's going to do. But Littlefinger's like a wild card. Like, he's using him, but he could go against what Varys is trying to do.
Yeah, he could get burned by Littlefinger.
Yeah. So I always thought there was something to that. Like, that's why he was so interested in Littlefinger.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that Littlefinger was his biggest I guess opponent, if you really. His biggest threat, for sure.
Yep.
Now, my dream ending for the show, which did not happen, and we'll get to that, but my dream ending was everyone's dead, the entire place is scorched to the ground, and Littlefinger climbs into the throne. That was my dream end for the show.
Hmm.
If you're going to go down the, we're not having a happy ending, that was my dream ending, is like, yeah. Westeros is a barren wasteland, everyone's dead, and then Littlefinger kind of sits on the throne and smirks, and that's the last shot of the season. I understand why they didn't do that ending, but that was my dream ending.
Yeah. Well, as much as the writers did Varys dirty, they also did Littlefinger dirty. You know, I wish Littlefinger...
His death was so lame.
Yeah.
Like, the girl set a trap and he couldn't figure it out. Like,
yeah.
Oh, that was terrible.
Yeah.
And I was like, I really thought... When they catch him in the trap and then Arya kills him, I thought right before she killed him, and now he's going to reveal that their trap was actually his trap. And then that didn't happen. I'm like, oh, okay, the smartest or second smartest man in the land just got murdered by these two teenage girls that aren't particularly smart.
Yeah, especially like Sansa. Like, I know, like, in the last couple years, you know, Arya said to Jon, you know, that Sansa's the smartest person she's ever known. But it's like, is she? Really? You know, like...
Yeah,
I
never got that sense.
No, neither did I. And she does some very stupid things. Like, for example, you know, in the Battle of the Bastards, which was amazing. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
Oh, yeah.
But... all she had to do was tell John, like, hey, I've sent for the Knights of the Vale. Let's just hold off for an hour. Then they'll be here. You know, we'll save a lot of lives. But she didn't. We'll
have a hell of a lot of troops left. You know?
Yeah, but she didn't. She let John and them, you know, pretty much get slaughtered. And then the Knights showed up.
Like, you know, and the last of the Giants gets killed. And
yeah,
they would have lost so many troops that they could have used later on.
Oh, yeah. Like, that giant would have been perfect for you know, the Long Night.
Oh, man. Absolutely.
But I'm, you know, like, if she's so smart, why did she let John, you know, like, literally it was only like 40 minutes they had to wait, and then the Knights of the Vale would have been there.
Yep. No, that was, I never got the sense that Sansa was particularly smart. I got the sense that she was learning how to be smart.
Yeah.
And that she would ultimately make a good ruler.
Yeah.
But I never had the sense that she was going to be able to rival Littlefinger or Tyrion or Varys in terms of intelligence. I never had that sense.
No. And I mean,
I thought she might, you know.
Her smarts are similar to her mom. Like, her mom was a very smart person, but even her mom couldn't see Littlefinger for what he was.
Yeah. And, you know, it just occurred to me, another really smart character in the show that we didn't discuss was, I think her name was Lady Olenna, the grandma.
Yep.
Yeah. She was incredible, and I don't think Sansa could ever turn into a character like that, but I think Sansa could have grown up to become her mother, you know, and Catelyn Stark was no fool, but she wasn't a great intellect.
Yeah. All right, well, some more on the list here. Craster's sacrifice babies. In season 2, we see Jon and the men of the Night's Watch head north of the Wall, where they meet creepy pedo Craster. He was marrying his daughters and had tons of wives, but we saw him offering up his male heirs to the White Walkers. The Walkers then turn the babies into a blue-eyed Walker, but we need to know, is there a small White Walker nursery we don't know about? Do they grow up? Are they the Knight's King second in commands? Is there a White Walker nanny? What's going on with those babies? We never find out.
And I completely agree with you. I think they were implying that those babies grow up to become new White Walkers. But they missed out on an opportunity to go a little deeper into the White Walkers and show us that. That could have been really cool.
Well, not just that, but it would have been cool if, you know, at the end of, like, at the end of the series, you know, when Jon and all them are heading north, you know, we see that they're still around.
Oh, that would have been awesome. We go to Craster's Keep and the last boy baby is becoming a White Walker. That would have been...
Yeah, White Walker babies are still there, right?
It would have been better than what they did.
Yeah.
Like, but, like... I don't know, man. This is a slight exaggeration, but I feel like I flushed things down the toilet that were better than what they ended the series at.
Yeah, I agree. The books that Sam stole from the Citadel. Sam made such a big deal about needing to be pardoned for these books and how he was researching ways to kill the Night King, and he stole these books to keep researching. Instead, all we got was the sad moment Danny made him cry, and the books were never mentioned again.
Yeah, yeah. And in the book series, Sam going there to learn how to become a maester, you get the sense that he's going to come across secrets that they're going to desperately need that will help them win the war.
Mm-hmm.
And they set it up in the show, but then they didn't deliver on it. They set it up like he was going to figure out what we have to do. And then, no, you just have to hit him with a obsidian spear and he dies.
Yeah.
Like, oh, well, that's dumb.
Yeah.
Like, oh. And, yeah, anybody could have done it. Like, it didn't have to be a special person or... Like, it was just so anticlimactic.
Well, it would, like, anyway. Well, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. who was the prince that was promised? So at the beginning of the show, or second season or whatever, Melisandre was, you know, touting Stannis as the prince who was promised. And then it seemed like it was Jon. So who was... You know, who was going to be Azor Ahai? Like, because the prince who was promised is Azor Ahai reborn. And for those who don't know, and this is where I'm a little confused with the show. Because we know the White Walkers came like 5,000 years ago. They were created, or actually maybe longer than that, 8,000 years ago. They were created by the Children of the Forest. We do learn that in the show. Because the children, the first men were killing them. They were killing the Children of the Forest. And I think the Andals. I think maybe at that point the Andals had come over too. So they were killing the Children of the Forest, right? So they created the White Walkers. You know, basically they took a guy, turned him into the Night King, and then this guy had powers to raise the dead and create an army to fight man. But this creation got out of control. And the Children of the Forest actually teamed up with men and giants to defeat the Night King and drive him into the lands of Everwinter, like basically as far north as you can go. Meanwhile, and all this took place during the Long Night, and the Long Night was a period in history where the planet, you know, I don't know, we can't call it Earth, but whatever planet this is, was covered in total darkness for years. And that's when the Night King really rose to power. Although he was created during the day. Like, the show confuses me. I don't exactly know.
I'm with you on that.
Meanwhile, in Essos, a similar thing was happening during the Long Night, where creatures from the north were coming south and killing. And this guy named Azor Ahai created this sword called Lightbringer. And he and his forces were able to drive these creatures back north. And Lightbringer, it was a flaming sword, but to get it to have its magic, like he built several swords and none of them, I guess, worked. And then finally he realized he had to sacrifice... He had to kill his wife, essentially, drive his sword through her heart in order to infuse it with power. And then it lit on fire, became Lightbringer. Yep. Okay, so that was an Essos. So, like, they never really make clear what happened there. Were those White Walkers too, or were they something different? And then meanwhile in Westeros, it was the last hero, who they think might have been Bran the Builder. So he was like the famous Stark that built Winterfell. He helped construct, or he built the wall. Was, they figure he was the last hero. He was the one that drove the Night King north.
Oh, so, okay.
But the show never really makes clear, like, Azor Ahai was in Essos. Why would he be in Westeros?
Yeah.
You know, and are these two, you know, like, the whatever came from the north in Essos, are they connected to the White Walkers? Because it could be the land of always winter. Like, it could be that it reaches Essos, too. Like, maybe there's some sort of land bridge that we don't know about. And they were there, too. Makes clear what it was.
No. I think I can shed a little light on that, actually.
Okay.
In the books, there's an entire character, well, there's many, but there's in particular one character that was completely 100% omitted from the show. Daenerys's younger brother, who also was not killed by Robert's men. And I forget what his name was. His nickname was Young Griff. So I think his name might have been Griffin or something like that. And he was raised by a knight from Westeros who was in exile, who had saved him as a baby. And that guy raised him specifically to eventually build an army and retake Westeros and claim his rightful throne. And at the end of the fifth book, which is as far as the series is written, he is just starting to invade Westeros long before Daenerys ever gets there. And I think he was supposed to be Azor Ahai, the promised prince. Because he was born in Westeros, but he'd be coming from the south. And just completely cut him out of the books. Because in the fifth book for sure, and I think the fourth book too, he's like one of the major characters. Like one of the main storylines is about him. And they just completely omitted that from the books, or from the show. And I think it kind of made sense. It's just getting too many characters to follow. But at the same time, you know, that could have been, they could have done something with that. And I always assumed three dragons meant there would eventually be three Targaryens to ride those three dragons. And in the books, Jon, Daenerys's younger brother, three Targaryens, three dragons.
Yep.
But in the show, two Targaryens, three dragons. Oh, well, I guess we'll just kill one of the dragons. Like,
yeah.
What? If you knew you weren't going to have three Targaryens all along, why did you bother having three dragons? Why not just have two?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was cool seeing the Night King get a dragon. But
yeah.
But as soon as he did, it was like, so, like, he uses the dragon to bring down the wall. I'm like, but they've been marching on the wall for years. Like, what was their plan when they got there? Like, it just...
They said all along, the wall was protected by more than just, you know, men with spears. There was magic things that prevented him, the Night King, from crossing the wall. And then all of a sudden he has a dead dragon, and that's enough to overcome the magic? That doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Well, that and...
You know?
Like, in season two, they hinted that there was the Horn of Winter was going to be in the show.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was kind of expecting that, you know, but...
Yeah.
But that being said, I just want to make clear, I haven't actually read all the books. I've read...
Okay.
A Game of Thrones. I started reading Clash of Kings. I've read a lot of the history of Westeros, the textbook that they came out with, and I've read a lot of Fire and Blood. So I haven't completely read everything. But so when it comes to book knowledge, I'm not completely knowledgeable there. But yeah.
And I read the whole series in advance of season 7.
Nice.
Was when I finally finished it. So that's going back a couple years now, so I don't remember every little arcane detail. And I definitely, if I, well, not if, when I eventually reread the book series, I think I'm going to actually take notes this time. Because there were so many characters and so many storylines, and sometimes it would be hundreds of pages before you would meet up with that character again. It got tricky trying to keep track mm-hmm. of who was who and what they were doing. So well, I think I'll actually would recommend, notes.
Oh, yeah. Well, one of the things, George R. R. Martin, like, one of the reasons why I love Game of Thrones so much, and why I'm a little, like, we talked about the Witcher, and there's that mm-hmm. other Netflix show, Shadow and Bone, I think it's called.
Yep. And I haven't watched it yet.
I'm so hesitant to get into watching any other fantasy show, just because of the world building that George R. R. Martin does and all the thought he puts into creating this world.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, for example, like I haven't watched The Witcher, but I heard one of the criticisms about The Witcher is, you know, like they try too hard to have a multi-ethnic cast. Like you got Asian people, you got black people, you got white people, blah blah blah, and it doesn't really make sense that they're all together in this world. Because like Game of Thrones, for example, like one of the things that they got right with season eight was when they're marching to, at the first episode, when they're marching to Winterfell and people are like staring at Missandei and Grey Worm. Mm-hmm. You know, because they had the people up north never seen black people before, because they don't live in the north. You know, like in this world. Well, and this is something very interesting, and that I think I read this somewhere. Maybe I don't know. I saw it in an interview. I can't remember. But one of the things that George R. R. Martin strictly adhered to with his world building is that there is no slavery in Westeros. Like, it's illegal. Like, that's what Jorah Mormont got busted for, because he was selling crux into slavery. So there is no slavery in Westeros. So in North America, like, in our history, what brought black people initially to North America?
Slavery.
So that's why, you know, there's African Americans here for generations, because originally their ancestors were brought in during the slave trade. So if there's no slavery in Westeros, there's no black people in Westeros. So like,
no,
parts
of Westeros would have seen them from doing trade.
Oh yeah. Like King's Landing there, you'd see some Dorne, of course.
If you went far enough north, you'd get to places where they've never seen anybody like that, because nobody goes up there.
That, and there's never been any slavery. So, you know, there was never anyone up there. Like in King's Landing, and like in Dorne, like the Prince of Dorne, his, I can't remember his name, the his bodyguard there.
The guy with the axe.
Yeah. And I mean, it's they're used to African American people there, but that's just like I said, that's the detail of the world building that George R. R. Martin puts into this world, you know, and people, you know, like I know some of the critics are saying, well, there isn't enough you know black representation on Game of Thrones. It's like, yeah, but most of the characters are in Westeros. You know, there isn't a lot of black people in Westeros. Like, Go ahead.
Well, it's hard for me, because I suppose I am a white person and a male and all that, but I didn't really feel like Game of Thrones struggled with that. Right from fairly early on, there was colors of people of different colors and different ethnicities mixed into the show.
Essos.
I'm going to keep that in mind when I rewatch the show, but
yeah,
I never got any kind of sense like that.
No, like, I mean, they introduce Grey Worm in Season 3 and Melisandre in Season 3. But there really wasn't a lot of people of color, you know? And in Essos, like, for example, when Tyrion and Varys in Season 5, you see more Asian people. I can't remember the name of the city. But it's the one where it's like a city on a bridge.
Yeah.
And one of the Red Priestesses was an Asian woman. I can't remember the actress's name. She was on Arrow. But that's the world building. Like, that's reality, you know, of this, the world that they live in. And I love those details. And then I heard that was a criticism about The Witcher, that, you know, like, it didn't make sense that there was all these different people in this world. Well,
And with The Witcher, I haven't really read all of the source material. I read a few of the short stories that Season 1 pulls from. And there's nowhere near that level of world building in The Witcher as in Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
And this is probably a good time to mention, Game of Thrones, a lot of George R.R. Martin's inspiration in the books is pulled from the Wars of the Roses, which was like a 100-year period of all of these royal families that were all intermarried and interbred. Like,
yep,
this is my cousin, and this is my second cousin, and that's my third cousin, and all of this kind of stuff, fighting each other and backstabbing, and it was all between England and France because the nobility were all part of the same family. And that's where he pulled a lot of the material. And he just mixed in, you know, he made up a new continent. He threw in a little bit of magic, dragons, like to a certain extent, zombies.
Yep.
But basically, he just took the War of the Roses and then fictionalized it.
Yep.
And I think that helps give it such a realistic feel to it, is that it is based on real history, with the exception of, you know, dragons and so on.
Yeah. Well, and one thing I loved about Game of Thrones is they don't hit you over the head with magic. You know, like, they're very conservative when it comes to the use of magic. And, I mean, don't get me wrong, I Doctor Strange is awesome. Gandalf is awesome. But I don't need a lot of magic in my fantasy. Like, I like that they're more restricted to it. Because, I mean, once you start bringing magic in full force, you can really undercut the drama.
Yeah.
But unfortunately,
agreed.
Dan and Dave brought in plot armor for Season 7 and 8. And even Season 6, Season 5, to an extent. Like, for example, like one example that comes to mind is, what is it, Season 5 or Season 6? When Arya, yeah, it's Season 6, when Arya's when she was on the run from the Faceless Men, and she was supposed to kill that music lady or producer or whatever, that actress, and then she didn't, and then they sent the Waith, or the Waith, was that what she was called, the Waith, after her?
Yeah, the Waith, yeah.
And then Arya gets, the Waith, like, stabs her, like, I don't know, 5 or 6 times in the stomach, and Arya gets away by jumping in a dirty river. And you gotta remember, like, this river is going through Braavos, so I'm sure, you know, people, you know, because there's no running water, there's no toilets, you know, when you shit in a bucket, they throw it in the river. Like, it's got to be dirty, all kinds of dirty. And she jumps in this river, and then she meets up with this actress, who I guess is like some sort of healer or something, and patches her up. And I'm like, how the hell is that even possible? Like, don't get me wrong, I don't want them to kill off Arya, but don't put her in that kind of danger, like, where she's actually getting stabbed. When in Season 1, you saw Arya stab that stable boy with one stab and kill him.
Yeah.
Unless the reason the Faceless Men wanted that woman dead was because she was actually, like, a witch, and she could heal Arya, If they had gone that route, I would have been, oh, okay, that's why they wanted her dead, because she's uses magic. Okay. But they didn't do that. But yeah, the plot armor, like one of the things that was very amazing about Game of Thrones in the beginning, like I said, prior to the show, I had not read anything. Going into the show, like I watched right from episode one, and I remember it was like I don't know 6 months before the show came out. I had just finished reading all the Dan Brown books, like the Da Vinci Code, all those kind of stuff. And I kind of put it out on Facebook, you know, can anyone recommend a good fantasy series? Like, I want to read a fantasy series. I just finished the Dan Brown books. I kind of want to get into the fantasy realm instead. Can anyone recommend, you know, something besides Lord of the Rings? And my friend Sheila, she's like, Song of Ice and Fire. I'm like, well, what is that? And then she kind of explained it. So I did some research. I Wikipedia'd it. And I seen that it was going to be an HBO series coming out in like 6 months. So I was like, maybe I'll wait for the show. You know, because sometimes for me, if I watch something first and then read the material, it's so much better. Like, I guess I appreciate the written word more that way. Mm-hmm. So that's what I decided to do. So at the end of season one, or episode 9 of season one, when they cut off Ned Stark's head, my jaw was on the floor. And I was like, I was waiting for something to happen. Like, you know, someone's going to jump out with a bow and arrow and kill Sir Alan Payne, you know, then, you know, there's going to be a big sword fight and they're going to, you know, ride off and Ned's going to get out of there. But when they killed him, I remember looking at my wife and I'm like, did they just kill him? And she's like, yeah. I was like, but he's the star of the show. You know, like, that's like, you know, the Sopranos killing Tony Soprano. Like, it just blew my mind.
I had read the first book before I saw the first season. I hadn't finished the series. I don't know if I had even started book two yet when I watched season one.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely had read the first book. And in reading the book, they killed the main character. Like, I'd never read a book like that where I know this is a series. I know there are books that come after. And the protagonist died at the end of the first book. Like, what the fuck? That is ballsy.
Yep.
And so, yeah, in the show, too. Yeah, like, nobody believed he was actually going to die.
Yep.
It was, that was crazy.
Yeah, I just remember being so blown away by it. And then, of course, like, I had, by the time we got to the Red Wedding, I knew about it. I hadn't read it in the book, but I knew about it. So, I really wish I would have recorded my wife. She wasn't, like, freaking out like everyone else in those videos. But she was pretty shocked.
Oh, yeah.
Because I knew it was coming. But, again, I didn't know it was going to be as brutal as it was. Like, when they stabbed Rob's wife, I was like, brutal. Whoa. I really appreciated that, because you never knew, you know, any character could go at any time, right?
Yep.
And when the Waith there stabbed Arya like that, I was like, well, she's done. You know, like there's no way you're coming back from that. And then she does. And I'm like, what? You know, then it was like, oh, man, plot armor, you know. But anyway.
It also, to me, in both the books and the show, the fact that anybody could, and many people did, die at any time really made it more realistic. Because there's so many shows you watch and you kind of go into it and you know, like, when you're, okay, like, just as a random example, when you watch the film Saving Private Ryan, you kind of know that the Tom Hanks guy's not going to die in the middle of the movie.
Yeah.
And you don't even think he's going to die at the end, but you feel safe when he's going through the battle scenes. He's probably not going to die. He's the main character. It's his story. He's not going to die. But when you're watching Game of Thrones after season one, you're like, nobody is safe. All yep. of these people that I'm getting attached to could die. It ratchets up the tension, and it makes it more realistic, because that's what history and conflict is like. People yep. die all the time, and yep. lots of times it is the people at the top. So I thought that was, you know, I loved it.
Well, and
did I love it? Did I love losing some of my favorite characters? No, but I loved the sense of danger that it had.
Well, and the thing, too, is, like, in real life, sometimes cool people die in lame ways. Like Khal Drogo.
Yeah.
You know, like, essentially, he got cut, and then it got infected. He died of an infection.
Yeah. And it's yeah, like, well, and he could have, he would have survived if Dany hadn't have had that witch try to treat him.
Yeah,
because she got the witch to try to heal Khal Drogo, but instead the witch made it worse, and eventually he died, and then she brought him back as a zombie or whatever he was.
Yeah,
but basically you're right. He died of an infection, and he yep. was such a strong and powerful character, and it was like, wow, that's so sad, like so yep. dumb, but it happens.
Yep, it happens,
and especially living the way they lived, which they were sort of loosely modeled on Mongolian culture. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a real thing you would have died of.
Yep. And so, I remember this is years ago now. Like we did, I think it was after season two. Like we were doing podcasts and stuff, and we used to do a year. Every year at the end of Game of Thrones, starting in season two, we would do like a wrap-up episode. And I remember saying back then, because Jeff Brown was hosting it, he was asking us, to what our thoughts were on season one. And I remember saying, when I first was watching Game of Thrones, those first episodes, in my mind, I was thinking, okay, well, Ned Stark is clearly, you know, the hero, and Khal Drogo clearly is going to be the badass bad guy. And yes. at some point, they're going to meet, and they're going to fight, and it's going to be awesome. But they both die in season one, never meeting. And I'm like, that sucked. Like, I was so looking forward to them battling or something, but that never happens. And then I was hoping to get Jeff on this episode, but unfortunately he couldn't make it. Because I wanted to bring up, because I remember him distinctly saying, because I was like, you know, like if the Dothraki comes to Westeros, I mean, they're fucked. And he's like, no. You know, knights in armor would beat the Dothraki. And I'm like, I don't know. You know, like I think the Dothraki, and that was one of the good things about season seven, was seeing the Dothraki take out that Lannister money train. Like that was
oh yeah
amazing. Seeing them, yeah. you know, like riding horses the way they do, and you know, like when they mounted on the side of the horse so they could jump off of the horse.
That like, was wicked.
Yeah, that was awesome.
That was pretty neat, because we'd seen some action with the Dothraki before, but we still weren't really sure. And then in that sequence it was like, oh wow.
Yeah.
Like she's got, you know, the army of, what were they called? The Unsullied. She's got the Unsullied army. She's got the Dothraki army. Neither of those are huge, but both of those are like, you like know,
the best you can get.
Extreme threats.
Yep.
And then she's got the dragons. There's literally nothing that's going to stand against her.
Yep.
Like, that was awesome to see that.
You know? Well, and that was such a cool scene. And the way it opened, like, you know, with Bronn, Jaime, and Dickon Tarly just talking, and then Bronn's like, wait a second, listen. And then you can faintly hear the Dothraki screamers in the distance. I was like, oh, fuck. Shit's getting real. And then when Danny flies in with the dragon over top of him, it's like, oh, man. Like, that was so cool. That was such an awesome scene.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I felt sorry for the Lannisters.
Yeah, well, I didn't feel sorry for them, but I was like, oh, you guys are fucked.
Yep. All right, well, we got still got some here on the forgotten list. The Warlocks of Quarth. You know, like, we saw, like, that Quarth Warlock girl when Ser Barristan showed up in Essos. With that poison scorpion. And then we never saw them again. The masked sorceress Quaithe. The one in season two that wore that mask that Ser Jorah Mormont got some advice from. She seemed to know about Dany. She seemed to know what was up. And then she just disappears. We never see her again. The White Walker's true purpose, like, aside from destroying mankind, like, what was their real goal? I kind of interpreted like they were force of nature. But, it would have been cool to, like, one of the things that was dropped is Bran's ability to travel through time. You know, like,
we could have a 45-minute conversation just about that.
There's so much we could have learned and should have learned. As soon as they opened that door, I was like, well, shit, we can, you know, we can see Aegon conquering Westeros. We can see, you know, like, you know, the king of the north that bent the knee, you know, like, we'd see all these things, but they never, you know. I understand now, they're like, well, we can't really do that because we're going to be doing spinoffs. And they're going to be prequels. So we don't want to really do that.
But that Bran, they set up Bran that he was going to be something insane, like so unbelievably powerful. And they never really delivered on it. Yeah. They started to, and then they kind of just stopped. They're like, oh, this is getting unbalanced. What are we going to do? Oh, let's just not do anything. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well,
and it was just like, it was like, man, I thought it was going to be Bran versus the Night King. Mm-hmm. I thought it was going to turn out that, like, you know, in Lord of the Rings, Gandalf says at the end, I'm not even sure if this was in the movie. It was for sure in the books. Gandalf says at the end, I was the enemy of Sauron. That's why I was put here, was to ultimately fight and defeat Sauron.
Yep.
I thought it was going to be like that with Bran. He was going to be like, I realized my ultimate goal was to save humanity by killing the Night King. And instead it was like he had basically nothing to do with it. And I thought that was such a bummer. We spent all of these seasons following Bran and watching him discover his powers, and then they do nothing with
him. Exactly.
And he's just, oh, I'm just a cripple in a wheelchair, and I have to run the Seven Kingdoms because nobody else wants me to. Or, like, nobody else wants to. Like, what in the fuck?
Yep.
Oh. Well,
one of the theories I had going into the final season was, like, when Bran goes back in time and sees the Children of the Forest create the Night King, and he comes back, and he says to whatever the Children of the Forest girl was, it was you. You created the Night King. And she's like, well, we had to protect ourselves. And he's like, from what? And then she looks at him and says, you. So at the time you interpret it as, oh, like she means man, which is ultimately what it came out to. But I thought, you know, because we saw when he went back in time, like the whole hold the door, Hodor thing.
Oh, yeah. And that was awesome.
That he can affect Hodor in the past.
Yeah.
What if
that opened up, like, doors? He should have been able to do that with other things.
Well, I was thinking maybe one of the times he goes back in time to watch, you know, maybe again to watch. Because it also established that he could go back in time to different times that he's already been and not interact with himself. Like for example, like the Tower of Joy, like when he first went there, he saw his dad fighting Sir Arthur Dayne and he goes running up the stairs, and then he yells, yells father, and then he turns around, and then he goes, and then the three-eyed raven takes them back. But at the end of the season, after the three-eyed raven's dead, he's the three-eyed raven. He goes back in time to that same point, and he sees his dad turn around and walk up the stairs. So he should see himself also, because he had already been there, but his past self is not there. So that tells me. So that tells me that, like, he can't. You know, either I don't know. He exists as the three-eyed raven out of time. I don't know. But my thought was at some point he's going to go back and watch them bring the Night King into existence again. But this time he accidentally goes into the Night King. Like the way that he can go into Hodor. So when they make him, he actually becomes the Night King.
And then they're saying, we had to make him to protect ourselves from you, not mankind, from you, Bran.
Yeah. It's kind of like the chicken and the egg. Like, so the Night...
That would have been so much better than what they actually did.
Yeah, so that was my...
And then if you had... You leave it with Arya killing him, then it's like she's killing her own brother.
Yep. Well, and then
she could find out later on, like, she could have stabbed him, and then he could turned into Bran, and she would have been like, oh my god, I just killed my brother.
Yep.
And then Jon would have got all mad about that. That would have been awesome.
Yep. Well, and that would explain how the Night King knew that Dany was coming to rescue Jon on the other side of the wall. How he had a spear ready to take out the dragon.
The dragon, yeah.
Because Bran knew that they did that, so he would know they did that. That would ultimately be their connection, right? And the reason why the Night King is so obsessed with killing Bran is because he wants to end that circle. He doesn't want...
Yeah.
He wants to kill him so he will continue to exist.
Hmm.
Because normally it would be, if you killed him from the past, he would cease to exist. But this way, because the three-eyed raven kind of exists out of time, like I said, he doesn't see himself when he goes back to other points where he's been. This way it would ensure his survival.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was one of the things I was hoping for going into the final season, but that didn't happen. a couple other things. So the Red Priestesses, that was kind of dropped. Like, Tyrion and Varys, you know, made a deal with them. And that one, you know, told Varys that she knows what was said in, you know, when they threw his cock and balls into the fire, that warlock, when he did that. She knows what the words he heard, but they never tell us.
No.
And Melisandre kind of hinted at that as well. Like when Melisandre showed up at Winterfell, I was expecting her to show up with like a bunch of Red Priests and Priestesses, you know, and they would use their firepower to help fight the Army of the Dead.
I thought how it was going to go was that the Red Priestesses... And I guess there would be priests too, because Thoros was a priest, but we didn't see a lot of them. I thought they were going to go and spread through all the lands, converting people, and then those people were going to join Daenerys' army. And she was going to show up, and everywhere she went, the Red Priestesses would greet her and say, we have 500 troops, we have 5,000 troops, we have this many troops. And she would eventually, you know, just have, like, you know, an unstoppable army.
Yep.
And then they were building up that the Red Priestesses were going to do something like that, and then they just, I don't know, never followed up on it.
Yep.
And it was like, well, why did we see them every now and then? We'd see one, and why did we hear about them if there was no point to it? Like,
well,
I don't know. That was weird.
Well, and I thought, like, the revelation in season 6 when, you know, one of the best anti-boner moments in pop culture is when Melisandre gets naked. And you're like, woo, here we go, you know, and then she takes her necklace off, and then it was like, what? You know, she's like a, you know, 300-plus-year-old crone. It's like, what? like instant boner ender right there, right?
Yeah.
And then that priestess that Tyrion and Varys talked to, she also has one of those necklaces. So yeah. It's like I thought there was going to be a reveal that maybe they were around during the last Long Night, that they are actually that
old. Yeah.
So
that would have been awesome.
You know, and then you know, like when they're having like their big meeting at Winterfell there, you know, talking about, you know, what does the Night King want? Oh, he wants Bran. Like, Melisandre should have been there. And she should have been like, this is what happened 8,000 years ago. And like, well, how do you know? And then she takes her necklace off and she's old in front of everybody. And they're like, whoa. And then she's like, because I was there.
Yeah.
Like, ugh, so many.
That I don't know. There's so much they could have done there. And then they just didn't.
Yeah. So I'm just going to quickly rifle off some other things that were dropped. And then we'll get into what we would have done different. The characters in Quarth, you know, just forgotten about. The love of Heartsbane. So House Tarly's sword, Sam steals it. And yet Lord Tarly doesn't go after him. You know, he's, you know, like that's the house sword and he just steals it.
Yeah,
The Riverlands. So after Arya kills the House of Frey, like, who's running things? Like, did she free her uncle? You know, because, you know, we know that he was put back into a cell after he sold out his uncle, the Blackfish. So, you know.
Oh, man, and I got to just say, I loved the character of the Blackfish, mm-hmm. and the actor they got to play him.
Yep.
Was so awesome.
Yep.
And in the books and in the show, I was like, oh, I wish that guy would live longer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I still quibble with that. Like, I understand why he chose to end things the way he did, but I still kind of feel that once he knew he had relatives like Sansa still alive,
mm-hmm.
I kind of feel like the kind of person he was, I can't die. I have to go and help her.
Well,
like,
yeah.
I always felt kind of like maybe, like, to me, that would have been truer to his character.
Yes.
To be like, you know, yeah, I want to die with my castle. The captain goes down with his ship, that kind of thing. Oh, but I have a niece. Or, well, yeah, she'd be his niece, right? Yep. And she needs my help. And I kind of thought he would be the type to, you know, well, I only got 20 spears, but by God, me and my 20 spears are going to go help Sansa.
Well, not just that, but, like, Brienne negotiated with Jaime. Like, she's like, if he's willing to surrender the castle, will you let them go with me and leave? And Jaime says yes. Like he could have saved his men's lives, because he knows, like, you know, if the Lannisters, you know, do take the castle somehow. Like, he didn't realize that Edmure was going to do what he did at that point. But if they did somehow take the castle, his people were going to end up, you know, either getting their heads chopped off or in prison. So why not choose to live? You know, like,
yeah,
like, come, like, I realize this is your home, that you were born here, all that kind of stuff. But like you said, you have, like, he has family that needs him. Go help them, and then maybe one day you can come back and take your home again. Like, I agree with you. I did not think the Blackfish would do that.
No, it just didn't quite ring true to the character for me that he would do that. And he was awesome. And I definitely am, you know, just wanted to see more of him because he was so cool.
Oh, yeah. I would love to have seen him, you know, at the Battle of the Bastards, you know.
Yeah.
He was a great actor.
Yeah.
And I would love to have seen him counseling Sansa. Like,
mm-hmm.
like we were talking about earlier about how Littlefinger got taken out by Sansa and Arya. Wouldn't it have been awesome? Like, the Blackfish would have seen through him. He would have realized, you know, what a piece of shit this guy is. Like, if he was part of that, I would have believed.
Oh, yeah.
I'd have been like, oh, yeah, he could outthink Littlefinger.
Yeah, and he would know. He's got the experience to know that Littlefinger can't be trusted.
Yeah, exactly.
And needs to be dealt with. Yeah.
Yeah. Another thing that was abandoned was Essos.
Yeah.
You know, she leaves Essos, and like, what happens? You know, like,
she leaves her you know, lover mercenary guy, who got recast, and I never accepted the new one.
Mm-hmm.
And she leaves him behind to run things, and we just never hear about the rest of that continent. Like, so much story happened there. It's weird to just be like, oh yeah, everything's fine. End.
Well, especially when they just retook the city, and like they just defeated the slavers once again, and she leaves. It's like,
yeah,
that bothered me. Robin Aaron, you know, we saw him, you know, when the Knights of the Vale left the Vale.
Yeah.
But then we don't see him again till the last episode when he's like all grown up. And I guess hunky.
I guess that breast milk really beefed him up.
I was gonna say,
fuck that was so uncomfortable to watch that scene.
Oh yeah.
Oh, it just skeeved me right out, man.
Yep.
Yeah, and that poor actress who played his mother, Liza Stark.
Yep.
She's kind of been typecast because she played basically the exact same character in that movie, The Witch. Which was a horror film, a low-budget horror film that came out a couple years ago and was a big hit.
Oh, okay.
And she played, like, the same character, this sort of screwed-up, kind of crazy woman who's breastfeeding children way past when they should be getting breastfed. And I was like, okay, I guess she's got it, you know, she's now, anytime you need a crazy woman to breastfeed somebody, you cast her.
Yep.
So... she's carved a little niche out, eh?
Yeah. Another one is the armies of Dorne. Like, we never see them.
Oh, man. Dorne got the short end of the stick when it came to the TV show.
Yep.
Dorne is a much, much, much bigger part of the books. The Prince of Dorne, played by our favorite Doctor from Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Yep.
Is a major character in the books, and so is his bodyguard. And in the show, they're in, what, two episodes? And in the books, there's, like, the prince has this whole plan. We're not getting involved in the infighting of the other six kingdoms. We're not doing that. The reason we're not doing that, we're saving our army for when Daenerys shows up in Westeros, so that we can immediately join her cause and give her her own 16,000-man army.
Yep.
That was his whole plan. And in the show, like, he might as well not even had his character for all the point that there was to it.
Yeah, because, like, he's in season 5, and then, yeah, first episode of season 6, he gets taken out.
Yeah.
It's
just like, oh... Yeah, like, oh, just... Dorne got the short end of the stick, man. Like,
that and his bodyguard...
They're barely in the show. They had almost nothing to contribute, and they're basically downplayed as, like, this tiny little place that's far away and nobody gives a shit about. And, yeah, that was an actual attitude that the rest of Westeros had... But Dorne was not just a tiny little insignificant place. It had a very, not the biggest army, but it had a large army that was very feared and very powerful. And, like, they might as well have just made it the Six Kingdoms in the show.
Yeah. Well, I've been reading Fire and Blood. Like, I got the audiobook. I have the book as well. But I've been going through the audiobook, and Dorne is the only kingdom that Aegon did not conquer, because he couldn't, because they were that good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they joined the realm eventually, but through marriage and diplomatic means, like, not through being conquered like the other kingdoms. So that always tells me that Dorne's pretty badass, because, you know, like, they were able to fight off Aegon and his sisters with their dragons, and... they were able to keep their kingdom, and even when they joined the Seven Kingdoms, they were still basically an independent kingdom. Like the rulers of Dorne were still called the princes of Dorne, right? They're prince, and if they have daughters, princesses, and you know, females could rule in Dorne. Like it wasn't just, you know, males, like it is in that, and it's seemingly in the other kingdoms. Like they were done dirty, you know, like what, we mentioned this, in previous podcasts, but Dan and Dave, the showrunners, they rushed it. Like this should have been like a 10 or 11 season story with 10 episodes per season, not six and eight for the last two.
Yeah. That was so annoying.
Yeah. Like, this should have been, like, 10 seasons. We should have seen more of Dorne. We should have seen, like you mentioned, Dany's little brother. So, I gotta ask you, how does that work with Dany's little brother? Because I thought her mom died giving birth to her.
Well, it turns out she didn't. So,
okay.
Dany's... And I apologize to anyone if I have this wrong, because I didn't reread the books and rewatch the show prior to this podcast.
So and there's
if
not,
I have my facts wrong,
there's,
I apologize.
And I should point out, we are not like diehard, like we're Game of Thrones fans, but we're not like diehard, like we know every fact. No. You know, we're just a couple of dudes that love this show, but we might have some of our information wrong.
So the Mountain was sent to kill the remaining Targaryens, and he picked up the baby and he killed it. And this was one of the big things in the duel that the what was his name? The Red Viper.
Yep.
Oberyn was mad about him. Oberyn was mad at the Mountain about this. You killed the baby. You picked up a baby and smashed its head open. You don't deserve to live.
Yep.
It turns out, he did kill a baby, but the baby was swapped, and the real one was taken away, and he killed somebody else's baby.
Oh.
So Daenerys thought the Mountain had killed her baby brother, but that was not what actually happened.
Well, that wouldn't be her brother. That'd be her nephew.
Yeah. Oh, no, you're right. Yes. Yeah, I knew I had something wrong.
Yeah, same way that Jon is her nephew, because Rhaegar is Jon's dad.
And that baby would technically have more claim to the throne than she would.
Yeah, because Rhaegar was next to take the throne, and then his firstborn would next take the throne. So that would be that baby. Well, next male heir. Because that was that's something I've learned in Fire and Blood, was that they had this council of where, I think it's the Council of 100 AD, because AC, because it's after conquest, so it's like 100 years after Aegon conquered. I think it was King Jaehaerys had a council where they agreed that the throne would not pass to a woman, that it would have to go to a male heir. So, like, for example, if a king had just two daughters, the throne would go to his brother or his brother's son, depending on who was alive. So that, you know, and with the show, I never understood, like, how could Cersei become a queen? Like, with that council, she wouldn't be allowed. Yeah. And how was she in the line anyway? She was the mother of the king, the wife of a king. Like, how does that make her the ruling queen? Like, I understand it makes her a queen being married to a king and being a queen mother, but how in this, you know, and I'm not trying to sound sexist, but that's this world that Westeros has created, that George R. R. Martin created, where it's a male-dominated world.
Mm-hmm. Which is modeled after medieval England and France.
Yeah. So even with Daenerys, like, you know, at least I could buy it, you know, that she's going to conquer Westeros and make herself queen.
Yeah, and she's going to show up, and they're going to say you can't be the ruler because you're a woman, and then she's going to say I have three dragons.
Yeah,
you have 3 seconds to change your to take back that sentence, or I'll burn you. You know, like,
Like, I just don't understand how Cersei could just, like, so quickly move into that spot.
Well, Cersei thinks that she's like Daenerys. She thinks that she's powerful enough to do that, but she doesn't have anybody who loves her except for Jaime, and she doesn't have three dragons, and she didn't spend her adolescence freeing slaves and dismantling a slavery-based political system.
Well, not just that, but how do the lords of Westeros just go along with it? Wouldn't they be like, hey, wait a second?
Well, most of the great lords are already dead already. Like, think about it. By the time Cersei's in power, Ned Stark's gone. Robert Baratheon's gone. Baby Baratheon's gone. Well,
and,
you know, like every all the great lords that could have opposed her, they're already dead.
Well, and that is something else I wanted to touch on, is like in the books, from what I've read, is a lot of these families are quite large. But in the show, they dialed them back a lot. Like the Starks, it made sense that they would be a smaller family because the Mad King killed Ned's dad. He killed his brother.
Yep.
His one brother took, you know, the Black, which is like a tradition of the Starks that there's always a Stark, you know, amongst the Night's Watch. So Ned, it would be just Ned and his family. But wouldn't there be, like, wouldn't, like, Ned's dad maybe have a brother that had Starks? You know, like, wouldn't, like, I know, like, on the show they kind of touched on it, like, because Tywin was all big about, you know, establishing this Lannister dynasty.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, didn't Ned's brother and father get killed by Aegon?
Aerys, the Mad King.
Or pardon me, yeah.
Because
they got killed by the Mad King.
Yeah.
Because it was supposed to be his brother was supposed to marry Catelyn Stark, and then when his brother got cooked alive in his own suit of armor, then it defaulted to Ned. So it's entirely possible that
his brother didn't get burnt. What happened was the Mad King, Ned's dad demanded trial by combat. And Aerys said, fine, my champion is fire. So basically, he got burnt to death with wildfire. And they set up Ned's brother. I think his name was Brandon. In a choke chain. Like, he was tied up. So he could, and I think they put like a bucket of water or something. Not too far from his dad. So basically, if he could get to the water, he could, you know, save his dad. But he had this choke chain around his neck. So he literally choked himself to death trying to save his dad.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, all right. I had the facts wrong a bit.
But... Well, it's pretty close. But yeah, it terrible anyway. But like I said, like, wouldn't... Like for example... like my mom's family, my mom's maiden name's LaBarge, right? Back a few generations, like they had a lot of kids. Like, it would be like my great, great, great grandpa, I guess. He had a bunch of kids. So, you know, I have a bunch of relatives out there that I've never met, you know, like their last name is LaBarge. Oh, yeah. You know, they wouldn't know that I was related to them because my last name's Lockhart. You know, apparently, like, there's a town in Alberta called Legal by Edmonton. Apparently, I have a bunch of LaBarge relatives there that I have never met in my life. Like, they're distant relatives. You know, like, they're, you know, probably sixth or seventh cousins, right? But they have the LaBarge name. So we are related.
Okay.
And I would imagine, because like in Game of Thrones, the Starks, they have to have Stark cousins somewhere. Like, I know the Karstarks are related to them. But I mean, they must have other Starks somewhere, and not just that, but like I know Lannisters. Like I know, like I said, Tywin was so focused on creating this dynasty, but I mean, like there's his brother Kevin Lannister, and there's Lancel. Like, there's got to be other Lannisters. Like, for example, like, his wife was a Lannister.
Yeah, they do kind of even reference that. When they introduce Lancel, they say something like, he's a Lannister from this sect of the Lannisters or something.
Yeah. Well,
which implies that there are tons more of them, yeah.
And another thing was kind of touched on in the show, but they didn't really get into detail, was the line that Tywin says. Like, at the end of season 3, you know, when they have that meeting of the small council where they find out Robb Stark's dead, and Tywin sends Joffrey to bed because he's being an asshole, which is an awesome scene, by the way. And then him and Tyrion have a talk, and Tyrion says, "When have you ever done anything that wasn't for the good of the family, but your own self-interest?" Right. And he said, "The day that you were born." And then he said, "I let you, you know, I want to take you out, let the waves wash you away, but I didn't. I raised you as my son because you're a Lannister." And at the time I was like, maybe Tywin's a nice guy. Like, he's not very nice to Tyrion, but he does acknowledge that, you know, he is his son, but he's not really. So what I mean is, Tywin, his wife, Joanna, her last name is Lannister. He married his second cousin.
Okay.
So, and they didn't touch upon this in the show, but there was a rumor going around that the Mad King forced himself on Tywin's wife. That the Mad King actually kind of had a thing for Tywin's wife. And that was one of the reasons why Tywin quit as the Hand, because his wife was always getting harassed by the knight, or by the king, by the Mad King. So anyway, there's this rumor that the Mad King had his Kingsguard hold her down, and he had his way with her. And one time when he came to visit Tywin at Casterly Rock, and she ended up pregnant. And they didn't say anything because Tywin couldn't, because he knew that this guy was mad, and if he, you know, tried to speak out against him, he'd be killed, right? So he just kind of went along with it. She got pregnant, and she died giving birth to Tyrion. That Tyrion is actually Dany's half-brother. So when Tywin says that line, "I raised you as my son because you're a Lannister," it's not because he's accepting him as a son. It's because he accepts that he's a Lannister irregardless. Like, gotcha. Whether he's his biological son, his wife was a Lannister. So, and again, they never touched on that in the show.
No, there was a lot of fan theories going around about that sort of exact topic, but no, they never really touched on that.
Yeah, so, I don't know. Like, I just, like, one of the things that sucked about the show was, like, I mean, we've mentioned about how big this cast is, and it makes sense that in this type of world, in this type of story, you would have many characters, right? But there's many more that actually should have been there. Like I said, like, all this extended family, like, where are the rest of the Starks? Where are the rest of the Lannisters? Where, like, House Tyrell. You can't tell me that, you know, like Olenna made this big deal about she didn't want, what's his name, the Flower Knight, Tyrell, the gay guy. I can't remember his name now. He ended up becoming an Iron Fist in the Netflix Marvel series.
Oh, yeah.
Shit, what was his name?
They had a special name for him.
Well, he's the Flower Knight.
Yeah.
Or the Knight of Flowers or something. But anyway.
I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
They made this big deal about Tywin wanted him to marry Cersei and have kids with her. And she was like, no. And then he's like, well, I'll just name him to the Kingsguard then. You know, they made this big deal about how he was, you know, the last of their name. But it's like, really? You're telling me, like, why didn't, wouldn't there be Tyrell Cousins kicking around? Mm-hmm. Like, wouldn't Mace have a brother? Like, why is your family, like, why are the families so small? Like, I understand in the show they don't want to confuse the audience by having all these cousins and all that. But in reality, that's not how it would work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think you're probably right. They just, for simplicity's sake, for the sake of brevity, they just left it the way it is.
Yeah, and I just, to me, like nowadays, a lot of families are smaller. You know, it's just the way it is. Like, usually most families are, you know, anywhere from 1 to 3 kids. Like, you don't really go bigger than that. Like, some do. Like, the Duggars or whatever, they got 18 or 19 kids. But most families are quite small nowadays. So it would make sense that, you know, a family line would end now. But with this being, you know, in medieval-like times, that's just not reality. Like, you know, their families, there'd be so many cousins kicking around. Like, the only ones that did it good were the Freys. Like, Waldar Frey had how many kids, you know?
Oh, man. There's so many.
And, I mean, they joke about it, but, I mean, that's the reality. Like that's what I don't, like Mace, like, when his wife died, like, why didn't he have another wife? Why didn't, Tywin have another wife?
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand why they weren't having more kids, you know?
Although, man, it was pretty bizarre when we find Tywin in bed with Tyrion's ex-lover.
Yeah, I was not expecting that.
That was a shock.
Well, especially when he seems to really hate whores. Like,
it's this whole thing about them.
Yeah. But anyway, let's get on to how we would have made it better. So now we've quantum leaped ourselves into Dan and Dave. So I'll just list off my stuff first, and then I'll let you go, Ragnar. So season 1 through 6 can stay as it is. In my mind, just 7 and 8 are the ones that really need to be changing. The only thing is, like I mentioned, Sansa not telling Jon about the Knights of the Vale. I would change that in season 6. And also, Dany, I would have her staying in Essos to bring order to Slaver's Bay once again. Theon and Yara, I wouldn't have them meeting her. And I would have Varys arrive in Dorne, where he unites the Reach and I would have him arrive in Dorne, where he meets up with Olenna, the Sand Snakes, and Theon, and his sister, and they would go against Cersei. So, what I would change. Season 7 would be 10 episodes. In season 5, we noticed there was no desert outside King's Landing. So why was there one in season 8? I don't know. So these are things that were kind of forgotten that I wanted to add. What happened to Winter? You know, like, they made a big deal at the end of season 6 that Winter was there. And then it just wasn't. You know, like, it was not a big deal. Like I mentioned, get rid of the plot armor. One thing about the last season, I was okay with Arya killing the Night King, but it would have been better if there had been some build-up to it. And what I mean is, in the first season, we were introduced to Cyril Pharrell. You know, her dance teacher who taught her how to fight swords.
Yeah, that guy was awesome.
And then we assume he got killed by the knights.
Yeah.
By the Kingsguard. And then in season 2, we're introduced to Jaqen H'ghar, who was the faceless man.
Yeah.
So how was he captured? Because he was a prisoner being sent up to the wall. How does a faceless man get captured?
Unless he wanted to be captured.
That's what I'm thinking. He wanted to be. I would have it, we would find out, a Red Priestess had a vision that led H'ghar to King's Landing. It was Arya's destiny to end the Night King. Melisandre's statement in season 3 about her closing eyes, that's where that would come into. And it would be revealed that Jaqen H'ghar was Cyril Pharrell.
Yeah, see, that would have been awesome.
That he started teaching Arya all the way back in season 1 how to fight. That and help to prepare her for her destiny. So
I still am kind of surprised they didn't do that, to be perfectly honest with you.
Yep, me too.
It was just so obvious and would have been so great that there's just no reason why they didn't do it.
Yep. So one of the reasons why they moved Dany to Westeros when they did, I think, is because she seemingly had no one to fight anymore, in Essos.
Yep.
So in my new season 7, Dany reigns as queen. But the peace she has brokered is threatened when a former slave master, whom escaped, makes a deal with the Iron Bank. The Golden Company is bought and does battle with Dany. So it'd be the Golden Company fighting Dany in Essos. Yep. And then during this time, Dany learns more about the history of her family. And this is also the time when she sent Jorah away. She told him to get healed. So in the show, he goes to Old Town. To get treated at the Citadel, right? So in my revision, he journeys to Ashai, which is the other side of the world, to seek out the cure for Grayscale. And Quaithe, the masked witch we saw in season 2, is there and helps to heal him. Quaithe tells him they must go back to Dany as the darkness is returning to Westeros, and if not stopped, it will spread throughout the world. They return to Dany by season's end. So that was Essos. In Westeros, start of the season, Tormund leads a group with Ed north of the Wall to capture 2 dead soldiers and bring them back to the Wall. King Snow is preparing the North to fight the Night King's army. Jon and his fighting men go to the Wall to assist the Night's Watch to prepare for the war. Euron allies himself with Cersei. Davos and Brienne go south to seek out Jaime and try to convince Queen Cersei to stop hostilities with Dorne / the Reach and to bring their forces north. Brienne brings a dead soldier with her to show Cersei. Arya and Sansa journey to Highgarden to meet with Olenna and the Sand Snakes / the new Prince of Dorne to similarly join the North and cease hostilities. They bring a dead soldier. Dorne and the Reach send forces north. Cersei agrees to the ceasefire. When Brienne and Pod leave, she has Brienne killed and Davos and Pod escape. Jaime is outraged when he learns and leaves. Bran continues to travel through time and find more on how to defeat the Night King. We see more history through his visions. Bran learns of the Horn of Joramon and sends word to Tormund and Ed to find it first. So that's the horn that could potentially take down the Wall. Sam is at the Citadel. He learns about Dragonglass and sends a raven to Jon. Beric, Thoros, and the Hound arrive at Castle Black. Davos and Pod find Gendry and escape King's Landing. Jon and Thoros leave Castle Black for Dragonstone after receiving a letter from Sam. They begin mining the glass and shipping it north. Euron and his fleet arrive and blockade the island. Davos smuggles in and rescues Jon. Euron's fleet is patrolling the coast, so Thoros knows another source of dragon glass and has an idea. Seek out the Mother of Dragons. Sansa, Arya, Olenna, and the Sand Snakes are all journeying to the north when word reaches them that the Lannister army has taken Highgarden. And the end of the season 7, the Night King finds the lost Horn of Joramund, just as Tormund and Ed find it. They are killed and resurrected into the Night King's army. Now he has the power to take down the Wall. Bran sees this and orders the North Army / Night's Watch to abandon the Wall and prepare for war at Winterfell. So going from here, season 8 / season 9. So I'm envisioning 9 seasons with 10 episodes each season. Dorne abandons the Northern Alliance and returns home to go to their to war with the Lannisters, but their ships are attacked by Euron's forces. The prince and some of the Sand Snakes escape. Dornish forces meet up against the Lannister forces at their border with the Reach. Winter falls upon Westeros. Jon meets Dany, convinces her to bring the bulk of her forces to the north. She had abandoned her notion of ruling Westeros, but now she is reconsidering. The Night King brings down the wall and comes south. Jon learns how to ride a dragon after Quaithe tells him he can. Arya meets Jaqen. He tells her if they are going to win the war against the dead, they need more people. She must go back to King's Landing and take the Lannister army as only she can. They come across Jaime, because Jaime, as I said, he was mad at Cersei for her betrayal, so yep. He goes heading up north, and they come across him. Arya tells him he must go back with her and convince her sister to change her mind. He at first refuses, but she tells him he has no choice. Jaime and Arya arrive in King's Landing without Jaqen. Jaime apologizes, then kills Cersei. Jaime is Jaqen, and Arya becomes Cersei. Arya/Cersei orders the withdrawal of Lannister forces from the Reach. Arya/Cersei orders the Ironborn to the north as well. Bran continues to search in the past to find a way to end the Night King. All the armies except Dorne eventually arrive north. They converge on Winterfell. At the Battle of Winterfell, the North Alliance is overwhelmed. All the children and old people were sent to the Twins prior. The survivors retreat to the Iron Islands. The Night King manages to kill Dany's riderless dragon and resurrect it. The Night King leaves his army behind and flies south. The Night King eventually arrives at King's Landing shortly after Dorne captured it. He destroys the city and resurrects some of the inhabitants to his army. They begin to march north. The North Alliance forces arrive at the Twins and prepare for a final stand. Bran finally learns how to defeat the Night King, but it will mean undoing all magic in Westeros. They must destroy the Weirwood tree that the Night King was created on. Dany and Jon fly north, but so does the Night King, as he senses what they are wanting to do. The North Alliance makes its last stand against the dead at the Twins. Cersei/Jaime seemingly die, and Arya/Jaqen return. Dany and Jon battle the Night King, but Dany manages to destroy the train. The Night King dies, and Jon dies, and the rest of the wall collapses, and the army of the dead collapses. So when they by destroying this Weirwood tree, they undo all the magic in Westeros. So the reason why Jon dies is because he was stabbed and resurrected by Melisandre. So when they undo the magic, it undoes her magic on him. And he basically has to be sacrificed in order to end the Night King. So Jon dies. Dany oversees the restoration of the Eight Kingdoms. Each kingdom names their own king or queen. Rather than having Bran the Broken. Basically, they go back to being kingdoms again, without one central king.
Which would have been awesome.
Yeah, so the North is ruled by Queen Sansa Stark. The Reach, King Samwell Tarly, relieved of his Night Watch vows because there is no more Night Watch, so he becomes King of the Reach. The Westerlands, yeah. Tyrion becomes King Lannister. The Vale, yeah. King Robin Arryn. The Iron Islands, Queen Yara Greyjoy. Dorne, Prince, yeah. I just made up a name, Prince Chad Martell. The Riverlands, King Edmure Tully. And the Stormlands, yeah. King Gendry Baratheon, because Dany does yeah. Legitimize him. With Bran being the Three-Eyed Raven, he is named Hand of the Realm. He will oversee all treaties and negotiations between the kingdoms. Dany teaches Bran how to ride a dragon, Jon's dragon, using a special saddle built just for him. Dany returns to Essos to rule as queen with her dragon. Bran's vision of flying over King's Landing is that we saw in season 2 when he has that dream where he's flying over King's Landing, and it's clearly a dragon shadow that we see. That's him later on. Like, they start rebuilding King's Landing, and he flies over it in his dragon. And then to end the series, we see another ancient evil beginning to stir in northern Essos. Like I mentioned, you know, there was Azor Ahai, and there was, like, evil in northern Essos as well. So that evil is still there, which would lead to another series. So that's what I got.
That's a hell of a lot better than what we did get.
Oh, yeah. Yep. So what do you got, Ragnar? What do you got?
Okay, well, I didn't write it down as detailed as you. I approached it more from we leave most of season 7 the way it is, and we just focus on let's make season 8 not suck.
Yeah. So one of my big issues with season 8, episode 1, nothing happens.
Mm-hmm.
Episode 2, nothing happens. Those two episodes could have been combined into a 10-minute sequence.
Because all they did was, well, here's where all the players are, here's where all the pieces are on the board, and then the next episode, well, they're still on the board.
Or like waiting
for something exciting to happen. So right off the hop, you didn't need to waste, when you only have, what, 6 episodes left, you don't need to waste 2 of them showing us where all the players are.
Yeah.
You could do that in a 5-minute sequence, a montage even. Basically, how I would have ended the show, and I already told you my dream ending, which obviously was not ever going to happen, could still happen in the books, who knows. I wouldn't have had Jon and Daenerys become enemies. I would have had them actually fall in love immediately and decide to rule together, because I think that was more believable than what we did get. And I wouldn't have had Daenerys go nuts and burn the whole city down and all that shit. I would have had her just kill the people who stood in her way and then, you know, try to reinvent a whole new system that betters the common man, which is what somebody like Varys would have wanted for everyone.
Yep.
And there's so many characters that they didn't really do anything with that they could have done stuff with. It was just, oh, it's just such a mess. Like, it was such an insult to the fan base to make season 8 be that bad.
Yeah.
And to have that many things go off the rails. The Night King shouldn't have been killed by Arya. Or, you know, like we were talking about earlier, would have been really cool if she kills him only to discover that he's actually Bran and now she's killed her own brother. That would have been way more interesting instead of just like, oh no, you just have to stab him with the spear. Well,
that or if there had been some buildup, like if she had used like her faceless man powers. It would have been like, oh, okay. It's like same with Dany, like her burning down King's Landing. Like if they had built up in previous seasons that she was a little unhinged, I'd have bought it.
Yeah, but they didn't. They didn't set it up at all.
They did the opposite.
Now she's like, oh, I'm jealous that people like John Moore, so I'm just going to kill everyone. Like, what?
Yeah.
What?
They
doesn't make any kind of sense.
Yeah, they did the opposite of what they were building. Like, you know, she always, you know, like, I don't want to be Queen of the Ashes. But then what does she do?
Yeah.
Like,
literally, you know. So, with the part where the Night King and his armies attack Winterfell, and I still have some quibbles, I don't think they should have been able to just get past the wall the way they did, or not as easily as they did.
Yeah.
But during that battle, we basically saw the entire Dothraki army get wiped out.
Yeah.
But then, like, the next episode, Daenerys is like, oh, me and my Dothraki army, and she's got this huge force of troops. We saw them all get killed. Where the hell did those guys come from?
Yep.
And then the way that sequence goes, because that is the only episode in season 8 that I watched twice, it sure appears to me that almost all of the wildlings are killed, almost all of the other troops that are there are killed, all of the Dothraki are killed, and that, yes, that the Night King is defeated and his army, with him being dead, his army is no longer an army and they all die or go back to being undead or whatever they are. And that the whole point of it was just now the survivors are on equal terms with the Lannister armies except for the dragon.
Yep.
But then it was like, nope, Daenerys still has troops, and nope, there's still tons of wildlings, and nope, the Starks still have troops, and these guys have troops, and I'm like, well, we saw them all die. How do they still have troops? This doesn't make any sense.
Yep.
So that really annoyed me. And, I didn't like the Night King's death. I did like the part where the dragon breathes fire on him and he survived it. That was cool.
Yep.
And, what could have been cooler is instead of him killing a dragon with the spear, the dragon attacks him, is breathing fire on him, and then slowly the fire turns to ice. And the ice climbs up the fire and takes over the dragon. That would have been, to my way of thinking, cooler than he just, oh, I hit it with a spear and it died.
Yeah.
And then I really didn't like that. I can't think of the character's name right now. The female warrior. Played by Gwendolyn Christie. Brienne of Tarth. I really didn't like that she slept with Jaime. I don't know if it was necessarily not true to their characters. It just didn't sit right with me. And I think it was just the timing of it. I think I would have bought them sleeping together after Cersei's dead. Like, almost at the end of the series, we see them hook up. I might have bought that. But it didn't sit right with me for whatever reason.
I would have been okay with it if, like, at the end of the series, she was pregnant.
Yeah, and we don't need to see them hook up. We can just, she's pregnant and Jamie's holding her hand and we kind of figure it out.
Or he, like, if he was dead.
I see what you're saying.
You know what I mean?
He's completely dead. But now she's pregnant. Yeah.
And a piece of him is going to live on through her.
Yeah, that would have been okay. I particularly did not like the way that Cersei and Jaime died.
No.
I definitely, like most people, I think, expected Jaime to kill Cersei. But I thought he would just kind of walk up to her and stab her in the throat with a knife or something.
And not just that. I just want to add, like, they died from being buried in bricks, right?
Which in TV shows is such a terrible way to die, because so many times, oh, it looked like they died, but they didn't. Here they are in the next episode. Like,
but the thing is, on the final episode, when Tyrion finds them, they're at like the top of the pile. How was that when there were no bricks there? Mm. Like the bricks started. You don't rise to the top when something's falling on you.
No, heavy bricks fall.
And not just that, but like they looked like they were sleeping. They would have been smashed.
It would have been pancakes.
Yeah, they would have been nothing. Like Tyrion wouldn't even have been able to tell that was his brother and sister.
What I would have loved to have seen for Cersei's end, and I don't entirely know how this would have worked, but what I would have loved to have seen was that Sansa kills her. And Jaime lets Sansa do it. That's what I would have loved to have seen.
Or
I don't know, I don't know how it would have worked, but that's what I would have loved.
Or
Jaime realizes she has to go and let somebody else do it.
Or instead of Arya killing the Night King, have her kill Cersei. That she's on her list. Like that was the whole,
Cersei's. Cersei's death was so unsatisfying.
It was.
For such a horrible, hated character, her death was so boring.
She was boring. Like, that final season, she did nothing.
She did nothing. She was so lame. for somebody who was so evil and had done so many things in other seasons, by the end it was just like, oh my gosh, she's so lame.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then if Daenerys is dead, then Jon should just rule the Seven Kingdoms. And if Jon is dead, then Daenerys should do it, or the two of them should do it together. I don't know. But the way they did it, man, it just stunk. It just stunk so bad. And then the other thing that I think would have been a cool twist at the end would be, it turns out the whole story, all the seasons, is Sam telling the story to someone, because yep. he's the author of the history of the War of the Seven Kingdoms, or whatever they called it.
Yep.
And you have Sam as an old man telling this story, and I would have loved that. Because they sort of suggest in the books, I believe, that that's what's going to happen.
That is one of her theories.
Might have even been in the show that they somebody even says that you'll have to write all this down or something. There's something like that. There's, yeah. You know. So that would have been another cool way to have the show end, is that, you know, it's all being told by Sam.
Yeah.
Who's, you know, writing it in a book. Yeah. But yeah, the way they ended it was just a major insult and a potential career ender for the two showrunners, because Disney had hired them to do the next three Star Wars films.
Yep.
And after Game of Thrones came out and their fan reception was so poor, Disney fired them.
Yep.
And said, nope, you're not working for us. You're not making films for us. We're not doing a new trilogy. You're out. And then they had also lined up another series at HBO. It was an alternate history show about if slavery in the U.S. was still happening. And HBO, after season 8, canned that. And to the best of my knowledge, those two guys have done nothing since. And so I'm not saying it's going to be the end of their careers, because I'm sure eventually somebody will give them a new show. But they might have put themselves out of work permanently.
Yeah. And
any show that they're involved in, they're going to have a hell of a time convincing people to watch it and convincing people to watch it all the way through. So those two guys really shot themselves in the foot.
Yeah, I don't think anyone can argue the fact that they rushed it. You know, and they rushed it for their own selfish reasons. And I just wish that they would have maybe just said, okay, you know, we'll find a new showrunner. We want to move on. We want to do Star Wars. We don't want to spend the next 5 or 6 years doing Game of Thrones.
Yeah, and they could have just said, like, we committed to doing 7 seasons, and you want to do more. And we think that you're right. There's more story that needs to be told. But we don't want to be the people to tell it. So find some new people. Why the hell not just do that?
I think it was their own vanity.
Yeah. They thought, well, we just did the most successful show in the history of television. Disney, which is arguably the biggest company in entertainment, has just given us creative reign to do 3 new Star Wars films, the biggest franchise in history.
Yep.
So our shit don't stink. We're going to just finish up this stupid Game of Thrones crap and get on to the real stuff.
Yep.
And the blowback was so hard that, I haven't seen them involved in anything new yet, that's for sure.
In 2019 at the San Diego Comic-Con, they were supposed to do a Q&A. They were supposed to do a Game of Thrones panel, and they didn't show up. And they were doing it was either before that or after that, the TV show Preacher was doing a panel. So you had, like, Seth Rogen and Dominic, I can't remember his name, the guy who played Howard Stark in Captain America, the young Howard Stark.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, they had that cast, and Seth Rogen, he actually started, like, answering Game of Thrones questions. It was funny. Like, it's on YouTube. He's like, yeah, you know, like, they fucked it. I can't say word for word what he said. But he basically said, yeah, they fucked up, and now they won't even show up at Comic-Con. So if you have any Game of Thrones questions, I'll answer them for you.
That's so funny.
Yeah, it's true. It's like, he puts his, you know, like, they knew they fucked up. They knew they did.
That's why they know.
Yeah. They've been hiding out ever since, and it.
Yeah. Can you imagine them at a panel at a Comic-Con? They'd just be getting torn apart.
Yep.
It would be awful.
Yep.
It would be literally uncomfortable sitting in the audience, because you'd just be like, "Yeah, I want to lynch them," and nobody has anything nice to say to them, and nobody even wants to let them talk.
That'd be bad. Hopefully we'll get a good ending with the books. That being said, The Winds of Winter, and I think the last book is going to be called A Dream of Spring. We're going on 10 years now since the last book was released. And speaking of YouTube videos, I can't remember what this is called. But George R. R. Martin was one of his big complaints is he just doesn't have time to sit down and write. And I don't blame the guy. You know, like, the guy spent 60-plus years, people knew of him, like, in the fantasy community, you know, even in the TV community, because he was, he did episodes of the 80s, Twilight Zone and Beauty and the Beast.
And Beauty and the Beast.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he was known in some circles, but he was not world famous. Now he's world famous. Now people know him. Like, I know he on one interview he was like, you know, I knew I made it when they did a parody of me on South Park.
And
I know he's been, like, I think he's been on The Simpsons. He's been, you know, and he does conventions. He does college. He's doing the college circuit. And I don't blame the guy. Like, I mean, you work 60-some-plus years, and then you become famous. Fucking rights, I'd be traveling the world and enjoying myself. Like, I don't blame him at all. And I know people are scared because he's, you know, an older gentleman. Like, I think he's in his late 60s or early 70s now.
I believe he's in his early 70s. And he's not in the greatest
health. No, he's not in the greatest shape. So people are worried he's going to die before he finishes his books. And it's funny because someone did this video. It's on YouTube where they're like, George R. R. Martin, like, he says that he does that line where he's like, you know, I just don't have time to sit down and write. I'm so busy. And they show him in quarantine. And it's like he's running around his backyard, you know, blowing bubbles. And then he's rolling down a hill and he's doing everything but writing. And it's funny. It's funny. Like, the guy they have doing that, he actually looks like George R. I actually thought it was him for a second. I thought, he must be doing this as a gag, but I think it was actually someone they got. But if I was George R. R. Martin, if I ever meet him or if he's listening to this podcast, who knows? My suggestion would be for him to find somebody, a writer that he likes, someone younger, someone who can write good, and get him to shadow him while he finishes Winds of Winter, and then get him to potentially co-write or write the last book. Like, have George R. R. Martin plot it, and maybe give this guy the keys to the car, and then maybe he can carry it forward. That's what I would do. Yeah. Like, at least,
in case.
Yeah, like, I mean, this is an opportunity because I know I've read interviews somewhere where George R. R. Martin said, like, he's not, like, if when he goes, like, that's it. He owns the rights. but I'm hoping that it's not. I'm hoping that he'll change his mind and find somebody to carry on his legacy in the way that the guy who did Dune, his son, Frank Herbert. His son took over, I believe. The last yeah.
And to a certain extent that happened with Tolkien too.
Yeah.
Christopher Tolkien has finished off a number of his father's works and published a whole bunch of, you know, more or less appendices explaining in greater detail things that happened in his father's books.
Yeah. So at least this way he can choose his heir, you know, like to carry on. And he could even maybe, like, because I imagine George R. R. Martin, like I said, he puts so much work into this world building, he has to have, like, massive notes all over the place of unused stuff. And he could be like, here, this, you know, you might want to do something with this one day. Because, like, sometimes some people can capture that magic, like, of another creator. Like, for example, for me, Timothy Zahn. Like, he did the Thrawn trilogy for Star Wars. He was the guy that George Lucas, like, said, hey, you know, I'm not going to be making a sequel trilogy. You know, could you possibly do it in a book form? Because he was a fan of his writing. And you read that Thrawn trilogy, and it's like watching a Star Wars movie. Like, a good Star Wars movie. It's amazing. So, I mean, my advice to George R. R. Martin would be to find somebody like that to possibly carry on for you. And if anything, to take some of the burden off. Because, like I said, you know, he went 60-plus years, you know, without being famous. And now he's famous, he's rich. You know, why not enjoy life? You know, like, you know, take some of the burden off. So anyway,
I'm in agreement with you. Now, I had heard, this is well before season 8, maybe even before season 7, I had heard that he had sat down with the showrunners and had conversations about how he was planning on ending the series.
Yep.
And I had read that the show was supposed to have the same ending as the books. They were just going to get there differently because, you know, there's missing characters and so on.
Yeah.
I'm not clear if that's what's actually going to happen now. I'm kind of thinking that now the show deviated from the ending that Martin had planned.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's also got to be weird for him, too, because he had, you know, this is my plan for these characters. And then the show comes out and it's kind of like, well, should I still even write this book? Like, it'd be so strange to be him right now.
Yep.
And try to be like, no, I have to separate my book from the show. It would be very strange. It'd be a very strange place to be in.
Yep. But like I said, kudos to him, though. Congratulations. Like, you know, he's literally living my dream. You know, as an aspiring writer, you know, and a guy with a creative mind, you know, I would love to be in his shoes right now. I'd love to be on the college circuit talking about stuff I wrote. You know, it'd be so cool. Like, you know, he is one of my heroes, like, without a doubt. But anyway, let's move on. I think we've hammered out this discussion. Unless you have anything more you wanted to add, Ragnar.
No, I'm good.
Okay. Well, let's move on to our next segment, which is Brain Candy. And we'll, like, we're already running 2 hours, so we'll try and keep this a little bit streamlined.
Well, I knew this was going to be a longer one.
Oh, yeah. So Brain Candy is the segment where we discuss something that we're reading, watching, listening to, and then we give it a pick or a pan. I recently bought a book, for people who don't know me. I'm a huge fan of He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. I grew up playing with those toys. I collect those old toys. I'm collecting the Funko Pops now that they're doing of Masters of the Universe.
And are you excited for the new Kevin Smith reboot?
I am. I really am.
Oh, man. So excited.
Yeah.
If anyone's going to get it right, it's going to be him.
Yeah, like, I love the 2002 series that they did. Like, that was that was great. Good. I don't know why it ended. Like, but, I mean, I'm psyched now because now I'm living in, like, this resurgence of He-Man. Like, I go to Walmart and there's He-Man
stuff. I was at Walmart just the other day, and they had all these He-Man toys, and they were the old toys.
Yep.
They're just new. Like, they you know, because, like, the He-Man toys were hilarious because it was, like, every guy was the same arms and the same legs. Like,
yep.
You know, we made one mold, and this character, he's got blue arms, and this one's got orange arms, and this one's got white arms, but they're all the same arms, you know.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw them, and I really, if they had had actual He-Man and Skeletor, I would have bought them, but they only had characters that I didn't care that much about. So,
well, and now they're getting expensive. Like, when they initially were coming out,
they were not cheap.
Yeah, they were like $14 a piece. Now they're like $24, and it's like, eh. Yeah,
Battle Cat was $40.
Yeah, and it's like, as much as I would like to have these things, I'm not gonna, you know, like, they're just gonna sit. Like, I'm not actually gonna play with them. You know, like, that's the thing. Like,
that's the price at Walmart, which is going to be one of the cheaper prices you're going to see.
Yeah.
So if you try to complete a collection and you end up having to buy a couple from a third party, you know, you're going to be paying $70-$80 for a figure. And to me, that's just too much.
Yeah.
At that price, you can almost buy some of the original toys.
But something I bought recently was the toys of He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. Dark Horse Books has been doing these He-Man books, I want to say probably the last 6 or 7 years. Every once in a while they'll publish a book. Like, one was He-Man comic strips, which I did not realize that they did, but they had like a He-Man comic strips. They had they reprinted the He-Man mini comics that came with the action figures.
Oh, cool.
They did a character compendium. They did the Art of He-Man compendium. So this is like the Toys of He-Man. So basically what they're doing is, like, this is a 700-page full-color hardcover book chronicling the Toys of He-Man, She-Ra, and the other Masters of the Universe. So basically they go from the 80s Masters of the Universe line to the Princess of Power She-Ra line to the 1989 He-Man line to the 2002 Masters of the Universe relaunch, the 2008 Masters of the Universe Classics. So basically every toy, every playset, they break down and basically describe them and give you a little bit of backstory on them. This is definitely, if you're a He-Man fan, you're going to love this book. It's awesome.
That sounds amazing.
You know, it's not a light read. It's a good coffee table book. It's not a light read. It's one I just, every once in a while, I'll plunk down, go through some pages, and it's like, wow, this is awesome. And like I said, it's full color. The pages are beautiful. The photography is great. Definitely a pick for me. That sounds awesome. It is. Ragnar, what do you got for brain candy?
Well, nothing as cool as what you just described. That sounds amazing. I'm currently watching season 2 of the television version of Fargo.
Oh, yeah.
I'm watching it with my parents, who have already seen it. However, my parents are seniors now, and they don't remember everything. So watching it with my father, he's just as surprised at the twist now as he probably was the first time he watched it.
Yeah.
And we just watched an episode that had Bruce Campbell in it, and this is in season 2. And season 2 is set in 1979, and in a way is a prequel to season 1.
Hmm.
And Bruce Campbell appears in it, and he's playing Ronald Reagan, who in 1980 goes on to become the president of the United States.
Yeah.
He was a pretty good pick for Ronald Reagan.
Hmm.
He didn't completely sound like Ronald Reagan. He still kind of sounded like Bruce Campbell. But the way they dressed him and they did his hair and his makeup, he was pretty convincing as Ronald Reagan.
Hmm.
And so then that got me off on a Bruce Campbell tangent.
Yeah.
So I had to go and watch Bubba Hotep again, because man, did he ever make an awesome Elvis. And then I started finishing Ash vs. Evil Dead, because I had only watched the first 2 seasons and I hadn't finished the series.
Okay.
And then I watched Army of Darkness last night. So
I'm on a big Bruce Campbell tangent kick right now. And,
nice.
So Fargo is an awesome show. If you like crime shows, like police and murder type shows, and you liked the film because it had that kind of black humor, I suppose, sort of dark and almost corny at times, but it's also about like death and murder. Fargo, the TV show, is great. I definitely am enjoying it. And then I'm also working through Star Trek Enterprise for our other podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm almost done season 4. And I got to say, season 4 kicks ass.
Yep.
Because season 1, I did not love that show. And I had to struggle to get through it. Season 2 was only a little bit better. Season 3 was notably better. And then season 4 is like, man, if the show had been this good from the start, this would have been an amazing series.
Yep. Oh, yeah. So. If it had been like that from the beginning, it would never have been canceled.
Yeah. Yeah, because season 4 is like every episode is just a banger.
Yep. And it's sad, like, that they, I mean, it's good that they went out on a high note, but at the same time, it's like, ah, damn it. You know, like, if they had done that right from season 1, they would have, if anything, they would have created buzz and got more people viewing it, and but anyway,
but they didn't, so
no. All right, well, let's move on to our Enders segment. So this is the segment where we're talking about current pop culture news. So one thing I got this week, I'm super excited about this, is right now in Marvel Comics, they're doing the Immortal Hulk run, and that is coming to an end. And then they're going to be relaunching the Hulk with a new creative team, which I'm very excited about. So Donnie Cates is going to be writing, and for people who don't know who Donnie Cates is, he's written Cosmic Ghost Rider. I think he was doing the Thanos series. He did the King of Black series that just came out. He's a very good writer. But one of my favorite artists, Ryan Ottley, who went to Marvel, like, he used to draw Invincible, the comic book series. My favorite comic book series of all time. He's not the original artist of Invincible, but he came on, I want to say, like, issue 8 or 9 of Invincible. And he basically took over main drawing duties, and basically carried with Robert Kirkman. He was the main artist for the series right till the end. And he's an artist whose art just got better and better as Invincible went. And when Invincible came to an end a couple of years back, he went to Marvel and was drawing Spider-Man, which he did a great job. I was really impressed with the Spider-Man work. But Spider-Man comes out like 3 or 4 times a month. So like he couldn't keep up. They had different artists coming and that was fine or whatever. But now he's drawing the Hulk, which is like one of my favorite characters of all time. Donnie Cates, he's one of my favorite new writers in Marvel Comics. So I'm super excited. It's not till November. But in November, we're going to get a Ryan Ottley drawn Hulk series with Donnie Cates writing. I'm super excited about this. When we do our end of the year, I have a feeling this might be my comic book of the year. Because the art looks amazing. What I've seen so far, it's incredible. We also mentioned a week from tonight, or a week from today, at the time of this recording, Loki is going to be launching on Disney Plus for Marvel. So that's going to be my next show that I'm going to be watching.
I think that's Wednesday.
Is it Wednesday?
Wednesday. I believe I read June 9, and that would be Wednesday.
Oh, for some reason I thought it was Fridays. But that's great. Loki is... I'm looking forward to that June series. 9th. Oh, even better.
Oh man, I am stoked.
Yeah.
I am very stoked to see where that goes.
Every
the trailer, looked awesome.
Every trailer and every teaser that they put out there, just it looks better and better every time. I'm like, damn, like this. I think this is not that. Not I loved WandaVision and I liked Falcon and Winter Soldier. I didn't hate it, but it, you know, there's things I think they could have done better. But irregardless, I think Loki's gonna just be amazing. Like I love Tom Hiddleston. I just think it's going to be fantastic.
Oh yeah, I think of the Marvel series that are coming out in the near future. I think this is poised to be the best one.
Yeah,
like on the small screen. Yeah,
yeah.
I definitely liked Falcon and the Winter Soldier, but I completely agree with you. There were things they could have done better. And as a whole, it was good, but it wasn't phenomenal.
Yeah.
And considering it's launching the new Captain America, it probably should have been phenomenal instead of just good.
Well, I unfortunately think it was a victim of the COVID shutdown. I really think they had to, like I mentioned in a previous podcast, I think there was that plot line I can't even think of that group.
Planet Smashers, Flag Smashers,
Smashers. Yeah, they were going to kill half the population with a virus. To me, that makes sense. You know that they were going to do that because they kind of seem pretty bland, and you know, but of course, with COVID, they had to change all that, and then there was a shutdown, and then you know, like I just think.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
Because it was, you know, as a whole, it was very well acted. They had loads of big-name actors in it.
Yep.
The production values were high. Like, there wasn't anything that sucked about it. It just felt like it could have been more than it was.
Yep. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, now that said, if there was season two of it coming out tomorrow, would I be excited and watch it?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And the same goes for WandaVision. If they said, you know, tune in tomorrow night for season two, would I be like, cool, I'm going to check that out? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I loved WandaVision. I enjoyed it. It wasn't what I thought it was going to be, and it went off in directions I wasn't expecting.
But I found with WandaVision, I was more excited for the next episode, because it's like, what just happened, you know? Yeah. Whereas Falcon and Winter Soldier, I wasn't really like that. It was like, you know.
Yeah, I was more just like, oh, sweet, it's Friday. I got something to watch tonight.
Yeah. Not like WandaVision where I was like, well, I could get up at 2 in the morning and watch it because that's when it actually comes on, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And just like, I kind of got to know what the hell's going on now.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so, yeah, I'm excited.
Yep. But Ragnar, do you have anything for Enders?
Well, I was just going to mention I read that, I believe it was today, the Disneyland Avengers campus in Anaheim, California opened up.
Yes.
Apparently it is limited to in-state residents right now and will open to out-of-state residents on the 15th. And who knows when people like us from Canada will safely be allowed to go. Yeah. My understanding is we could go now, but then we'd have to do the $2,000 2-week quarantine on our way home.
Yeah. And
I don't know about you, but that's a little out of my reach.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No thanks. No thanks.
That's pretty exciting. And I would still love to go down to the States and go to the Galaxy's Edge, the Star Wars one.
Yes, me too.
But, you know, between the pandemic and the pandemic and also the pandemic, it's not a reality for me right now.
Well, I know one day I want to get back to Disneyland. Like, I've been there twice. I went there in 94 with my parents, and then I went there in 2013 with my wife and kids and my brother-in-law and his family, and my grandma and my aunt. And we had a blast. Like, I love Disneyland. Like, I'm not a ride guy per se. Like when K-Days is happening, I don't go in there and ride the rides. I don't do that. You know, Galaxyland at West Edmonton Mall, I don't care. But Disneyland is different. It is so different. The rides are so amazing, and you literally become a little kid. And I could see myself even becoming even more of a kid with Marvel and Star Wars. Because when I went in 2013, like, they had just acquired Lucasfilm. So they had an Indiana Jones ride, which was awesome. And they had one Star Wars ride. And it was awesome. But other than that, there wasn't much there in regards to Star Wars. And I think at the time, Six Flags still had the Marvel license. So they didn't have any Marvel stuff there yet.
Oh, okay.
But now they have like this Marvel Academy or Avengers Academy, whatever it is. And then they have all the Star Wars stuff. I'm so excited to go there one day.
I've never been to Disneyland, but I went to Universal Studios in Florida. We had to choose between Disneyland and Universal Studios, and there was three of us, and two people said this over that, so we went to Universal Studios, and that was in 2015, and they had tons of Marvel stuff then.
Yep.
I don't know if they still do or still would, but back then they had tons of it, and it was awesome. And I'm like you, I'm not a big rides guy, but I went on all of the rides there except for one, and all of them were very enjoyable and super interactive and immersive, and I would go back there in a heartbeat.
Yep.
And we only went for one day, and we for whatever reason, were not organized enough to get there right when they opened. We got there, they'd already been open for an hour, and 6 or 7 hours in a theme park like that is just not enough time.
No.
The Harry Potter chunk of that park alone, you could spend 6 hours in. So, or the Simpsons, we went to the town of Springfield and I could have spent the whole day just there because it was being in the Simpsons.
Yeah.
So, I'd love to go to Disneyland too, especially now with the Star Wars and Marvel ones.
Well, Disneyland, and then right beside Disneyland, they have California Adventure, which is basically, it's considered another park. So we had a pass to go to both of them.
Okay.
So, the California Adventure, they have... Disneyland is still fantastic, but Disneyland is a little bit more congested because it was built back in the 50s initially, so they didn't really, plan things out. I don't think they thought they were going to get as big as they did. Whereas California Adventure, everything's a little bit wider. The streets are wider. Everything's just a little bit bigger. It's totally worth it to get a park pass so you can go to both.
Yeah.
But I know you're talking about the Simpsons there. In the California Adventure, they have Cars Land, which is based on the Cars movie.
Oh, yeah.
Which, when my son was younger, he loved that movie. My nephew loved that movie when he was younger. I remember watching that first movie, taking my son to watch the first movie. And whatever. It was, I wasn't like, oh, my God, this is so awesome. But when I went to that Cars Land, it really felt like I was in that movie. You really feel like you're in the desert, even though you're not. And like I said, it's like you're a kid, I felt like such a kid. I'm looking forward to one day going back for sure. I haven't been to Florida. I do want to go to Disney World and I've been to Universal Studios California, but that was back in 94. But even then, it was pretty impressive.
In 2015, it was very impressive.
Yeah, so I would love to go check
that out. In Orlando, it's basically like you go down a road, and on one side is Disneyland, on the other side is Universal Studios. They're both located in the same area, but it's not like you could just run across the street and do both. That's not feasible.
No. You definitely need to set aside time.
The other thing that we did wrong
We didn't think we were going to go on very many rides, so we did not buy the fast pass that lets you skip the line.
Yeah.
Buy the fast pass. Like, we were there in January when it was not busy, and we still wasted a lot of time waiting in lines.
Yeah.
So if you're going to go all the way, like for myself, if I'm going to go all the way to Florida again to go to that theme park, I'm going to spend the extra $30 or $40 to get that skip the line, because that might mean I get to do one more ride in a day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, those fast passes are worth it.
That was a huge mistake on our part. But we didn't think we were going to go on any rides, and we ended up going on 8 or 9, I think. So.
Yeah. Well, like when we went to Disneyland in 94, we only spent a day there. And that definitely was not enough time. And back then, they didn't have the California Adventure. They were just building it.
Oh, yeah.
So when we went in 2013, it was actually our grandma that planned the whole trip. She planned it with her cousin, who's a travel agent and stuff.
Oh, okay.
And so she had it all planned out, because she'd been there with my Uncle Doug and his family and stuff, right? Previously. So she knew the ins and outs, and she got us the fast pass and all this other stuff. And it was so worth it. It's like, and we were there for 5 solid days, and it still wasn't enough time.
Yeah. Wow.
Like,
well, I could see it from my limited experience that, like if I went back to Universal Studios, that's at least two or three full days. And I'd be there waiting in line in the morning before they open, because, there was so much to take in.
Yeah. And there was so much that we didn't do. Like I know at the California Adventure, they have a winery there. And we were going to go check it out, but we had the kids, right? So I was like,
Know?
Yeah. But maybe next time we won't have the kids. I don't know.
Yeah. It was a ton of fun. And I'm hopeful that this COVID thing is going to, the vaccinations are rolling out, and it's entirely possible that later this summer and into the fall, life might start going back to normal, and maybe by next year will be back to normal. And that could mean that by 2023, could be traveling internationally again.
Yeah. Well, and that's, if you're from Alberta, if you're part of the Conservative Party, things are already back to normal. Like the premier's having non-socially distanced parties on his private balcony.
The Alberta Health Services ordered an injunction against a rodeo that was supposed to be this weekend. And in court, the guy said, "So how come I'm getting shut down, but the premier can drink with his buddies on a rooftop?" And the judge wasn't having any of it, but
I thought,
that guy has a really good point there.
Well, there's this one guy that Global News interviewed. He's like a political scientist, and he's like, they're allowed to do that, but they have to be from the same household. And they weren't social distancing, and it's supposed to be like on a patio, but it was an open balcony. But it's like, unless they're Spider-Man, there's no way that, they didn't go up there together in the building, which they're not supposed to do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But anyway. There's just
your classic political thing.
Oh, yeah.
We play by our own set of rules. And
yeah.
Jason Kennedy's he's just doing a really good job of getting everybody on both sides upset at him.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And they're the same party. Like at Christmas time, they're telling all of us we can't have Christmas with our families.
Yeah. Yeah. Then 15 of them go to Hawaii and places like that.
Mexico. And
we had that in Saskatchewan, too. But the MP of ours that went to Hawaii over Christmas, when he came back, they booted him out.
Yeah.
Like, not just out of his position, out of the party. You're gone. This is unacceptable. In Alberta, those people, they just got a slap on the knuckles.
Yeah. The only people that get booted out are the people that actually speak against him.
Yeah.
So as long as you kiss his ass, you're okay.
They're like, no, you're out. Yeah. that was not cool.
Yeah. And that's the way it should have been. But anyway, I think we could call this an episode. But before we go, we're going to do that thing of where can we find you on the internet? So if you want to check out my blog, I do blog occasionally at randomnerdness.blogspot.com. I recently was blogging about the Edmonton Elks, the new football name for the football team.
Yeah, I guess that was an obvious choice.
I was so ready to give up football. I was like, you know what? But then I was like, I like watching it. I can't do it.
Yeah.
It's like, damn it. And I'm not going to cheer for any other team. Like, I mean, I'm not going to become a Stampeders fan. Like, the Rough Riders, I actually like the Rough Riders, but
yeah.
I don't want to, you know, I've been an Edmonton fan all my life. I can't, you know, yeah. Like, I think it's stupid that they gave in to cancel culture, but... And I'm saying this. Yeah. I'm saying this as a native person. Like I identify as a Métis man. Like I am part native, and I had no issue with that name, and neither did any of my family. It's just, I hate that we live in a society now where the minority dictates what is going to be, and by that I mean it used to be that we voted on things, so that there was consensus, but. That's not the way it is. It's like if one person's offended, we all have to be offended now.
Yeah, and I think it's okay to, well, I don't know, okay, I think it's very important to have respect for minorities and to make sure they're not being neglected or abused. But, yeah, it does very much feel like the minority is dictating everything nowadays, and I don't know if I quite agree with that.
Yeah. But anyway, that's my most recent blog.
So I have to say go Rough Riders because you'll get lynched here if you say any other team.
But to be honest, they're my second CFL team. I've always loved the Rough Riders.
Well, then you're welcome to visit anytime you want.
Yeah. Well, those are my favorite games to go to. Like when I used to go to more football games, I'd always hit the Rough Rider games for sure because the fans were so fun. Yeah. Like, I had such a good time with Rough Rider fans.
We have here. We don't have a hockey team. We don't have a baseball team.
Yeah.
So, football's what we got.
Yeah, and I find Rough Rider fans are so much more fun to be around and to party with.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
But anyway, Ragnar, where can we find you, sir?
Well, RagnarTheTrader.com is my main website. You can also find me on Etsy at RagnarTheTrader. Or on Facebook or Instagram under the same handle, Ragnar the Trader. And fingers crossed, I'll be doing shows again in August and into September. And with a good dose of luck and a couple more needles, should be able to do all my normal shows in over the winter. And then by next spring, we should be back to normal.
Yeah.
And you'll be able to come see me at shows all across Western Canada. That's what I love doing, and I'm really hoping to be back at it right away.
Yeah, I'm very hopeful too. Like even come October, like if you're planning on being at Edmonton, even if I have to wear a mask in there, I don't care as long as we can have a convention. Yep. I'd wear a mask.
Comic-Con is the perfect place to have a mask mandate because just pick a cosplay that involves a mask. Yeah. Almost all of them do.
Yeah.
You know? it's the perfect place for that.
Yeah. No.
You know, do I love wearing a mask? No, I hate it. But will I wear it if it means I can do shows again? Yeah. And I won't even complain about it.
Yep. So. Yeah. That's the way I look at it. Even now, like going to Walmart. Like I got to wear a mask. Okay. I want to go to Walmart. Yeah. I will do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to go see if they have any new He-Man toys.
Yeah, exactly. I want to see that He-Man display. All right. Well, thank you, dear listener, for taking the time to listen to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. This was our How the Westeros Was Won episode, and we will see you again in the not-too-distant future. We'll be right back.
their king.
They know I saved the city. They know I won the war.
The war's not won.
Starks have always ruled the North. If they're alive, the country will rally to their side.